Okay, we have Clancy Bowick here today, and Clancy was not a DJ at WTMA, but he worked in the sales department.
Yeah, we paid you guys salary.
Well, we probably would do it for the love of radio for a couple of weeks, but when the rent's due and you got to buy groceries, you need a paycheck, and the guys in the sales department took care of that. What exactly did a radio salesman do at WTMA?
We just made sales calls. We got people to advertise their products and services over the radio station. Our particular era, we enjoyed so much because we'd work so closely with the creative people. Now, a lot of them call them disc jockeys, but they'd like to be called creative people, and that's exactly what they were. We would work together, stay up to wee hours in the morning, creating commercials and spots for people, and really enjoyed it. Enjoyed influencing people about what to buy and what services to do, and also getting involved in live remote broadcasts. We get involved in political issues and all as well. So it was kind of like unlike today where you've got one person that does one thing. We just kind of went over to different. I've covered news stories and all that as well. So
now, when exactly were you at WTMA?
I was at WTMA in 1972.
How long were you there?
About 3 years.
Now, they were in the Orange Grove Road studios at
that
time.
Exactly.
And still a top 40 radio station.
That's right.
Who were some of the folks that you remember working with during your 3 years there?
John Trenton, I think he was called the program director. He had a heart for it as well. John really did. I worked with Gordon Stinback. He was a sales manager. Bill Jones was in sales. We had a simulcast at the time, WTMA, WTMA-FM. And while I was there, we changed. The FCC caused us to change our call letters. We were no longer simulcast. And so we went to the call letters of WPXI. That's one that Chuck Smith, the owner in WTMA, picked out. He wanted to call it Pixie. And then someone came from Philadelphia, wanted to buy the call letters because PXI represented Philadelphia Channel 11, XI, just like CIV here in Charleston. And he came to the sales department and said, what do you think we should sell this for? They're coming in today. And he said, I'm going to hold out for $5,000. And I said, I have no idea what they're worth. And he came in just as happy as he can be because when they came out of the meeting, they said that we're prepared to go as much as $25,000, and that's all we can do. So he was really happy. And that's when it became WSSX because we sold the call letters.
Now, why at the time did they go from a top 40 station on FM when they changed to WPXI? Why did they decide to put different programming on the FM?
The versatility, being able to get different audience. When I was there, we had the run of the show. It was like 12, maybe 14 radio stations in the market, if you include Somerville and Monk's Corner. And we had like a 46, 48 share of the market with WTMA. WTMA was the American Graffiti Charleston for so many years, and top 40 was the format, and we would go out, and everybody knew who we were, and we would joke about how many spots you want today, and they'll say, I'll take 18, and I'm sorry, we can give you 12, because when you told them that, they'd want it even more. And so it was nice to be able to have that power.
So you had no problem selling advertising on the radio station?
Not really, no. It was a lot different than it is today. I don't know how they do it today. I mean, it's 30-some-odd radio stations in the market. And how many cable, TV, satellite, internet, and all that? You're being bombarded from every direction. We were heard. We were heard. In fact, when I worked at some of the lower power radio stations, before TMA, I was at WQSN Radio, Barry Winton Station. And it was a low frequency at night. And we would brag that I can get you results at nighttime, too. I'd run you the smallest spot at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it'd be 10 seconds, and we'd only run one spot, and you'd get results. And the client was amazing. How are you going to do that? And we'd say, well, we get to write the copy. We get to say what we're going to say about you. And as an example, if I was talking to Cadwallader Jones at Jones Ford, for instance, a good Christian man, I would say something like, the commercial's going to say, everybody, Mr. Cadwallader Jones at Jones Ford wants to know that he's coming out of the closet. He said, well, I guess you will get results. Then I said, well, okay, then we agree that radio will work.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to have to sit down and write the copy you want to put on the air and where we're going to put it.
What about some of the promotions that you were part of at WTMA? Do you remember anything
specific? Oh, gosh, yes. We did some crazy things. We did a lot of stuff with music promotions, theater promotions. Booby Nash and I one time, we were promoting a movie called The Culpeper Cattle Company. I think it was a Clint Eastwood movie or something. And so we took a cow, took it down the middle of Dual Lane with, you know, just a bell on it, and had people honk at us when they saw us. And we were broadcasting live. We'd stop at a phone booth and call in and say, you know, we're now on Rivers Avenue at Remount Road, and we're approaching the theater and with the cow, and we drew a big crowd, you know, that got traffic jam and all that because of the power of the media. did a lot of live remote broadcasts. Didn't have cell phones and all that. You had to hook up a line. Like, I remember being at the boat dealership right over here, right over by the bridge, and one of the lines got loose, and Bell South, actually they were called Southern Bell at the time, was apologizing. They said it was a communication problem. And I said, you're the largest communication network in the world. You should be able to figure this out. And we had an audience. I mean, the people were out there. They were listening. We weren't crass. We weren't vulgar or anything like that. And we were believable. And they looked to us for data and information.
Once WTMA FM became WPXI FM and started running a rhythm and blues format, did you notice any impact on WTMA AM as far as your advertising results or the ratings?
No, TMA, it was an era there where the music was still important.
And people were still listening to music on AM. Not everybody had FM radios in their car.
Exactly. And FM was coming on real strong, but AM, you know, was top 40, and it was designed that you would listen for 2 hours, and you've heard everything we're going to say for the whole day. You know, all the music's going to be played in about 2 or 3 hour period of time because it was just played over and over again. And I worked with Doug Clements, Doug Randall, who was what he was known as, radio name. He was the American graffiti person at the top of the patio drive-in theater. Because when I was there in 72, that was gone. But the stigma from that era was still at WTMA. We're still number one with the most audience. And we knew it. And our competition, but when they went to Pixie, was mainly because of the population, because of the diversity in Charleston, because of the high ethnic black population in Charleston. We had a lot of competition from a station called WPAL. And their ratings were very high. So when we went with Pixie, the R&B, that cut into theirs a little bit. So actually, between the two stations, we got more audience.
Why did you leave WTMA?
I left there and went into the promotion business with a hockey franchise expansion in Atlanta. Gordon Stenback, who was the general sales manager at WTMA at the time, was a Canadian, and he knew hockey. So we went to Atlanta and got the television and radio broadcast rights for Atlanta hockey. From there, we were able to pick up a network of radio stations, sell hockey for the first time in the South. I was selling hockey. I'd never seen a live hockey game before in my life. And came back from that and went into the advertising agency business. David Simmons had a small agency, and Wes Ferns and I, we all joined together, and Wes was a creative person. I was the AE account exec, and David was the guy that was the personality man that went out and got a lot of local accounts. And then from there, I had an offer for Channel 5 television. I said, okay, I'll go to television. And John Rivers Jr. offered me a position at Channel 5, and I ended up as local sales and regional sales manager there, and also was able to make some national sales trips as well.
Do you remember what advertising rates were like at that time at WTMA? Have any idea?
Yeah, under $10.
For national accounts?
Yeah, the frequency was the way. We'd package, you know, and we'd say, let's get results for this client. And we'd package, and sometimes we'd do what we call an unlimited spot package, where you had availability. You'd run so many commercials, it's unlimited. So you would divide the number of commercials you ran. I mean, you don't replace the airtime. You know, it's not like a commodity where you'd restock it the next day. Once the airtime was gone, it was gone. So let's get results for this guy. The only time it really tightened up to the rate card was during political season, because of the fact that you had to go with the end rate for political candidates and all as well. And then you got up to times where your morning drive and all was full. So you would have to sell specifically morning drive, afternoon drive time. Most of what I sold was ROS, which is known as run of station. That way the client was able to get a multitude of spots and get the frequency that was needed for the cumulative audience that we offered. So, you know, under 10, I've sold spots, believe it or not, as low as $2.75 in this market. And, of course, that was in 1969.
Must be the 3 o'clock in the morning commercials.
Well, yeah, we had a 50-spot package. You buy 50 spots in 10 days, get you 2 complete weekends, 1 full week, and 50 spots blast away at $2.75 a piece. And the guys, they'd buy them every 10 days. Clients would call and say, do that again, do that again, do that again. And we would continue to do it until we got to the point where the log was full. Then you'd cut back, supply and demand. And we didn't run as many commercials as what you guys are doing today. I mean, gracious goodness, sometimes I flip it on. I can drive from here to the Piggly Wiggly, and I haven't heard anything but commercials. We limited it. We had integrity. I'm not saying they don't today, but the news department, for instance, we had people who actually went out to get the news. They were actually out there with mics that said WTMA, WQSN. It was highly competitive. And we had news cars for radio. They had integrity. I remember one time I had a sponsor. We had sponsors to newscast. It was a realtor company in Goose Creek that had a problem with their water not being pure or something. And they had sponsored the news. The lead story was the bad water at this subdivision. And the client called me and said, y'all can't run that. I'm sponsoring that news. And I said, they can. You know, this is news is news, and I don't interfere with the news. I'm sorry, but I'll put you on another newscast. So it was a separation there of the news with sales, and we didn't influence each other, try to help each other.
If I say WTMA in the early 70s when you were there, what immediately comes to mind?
The camaraderie of the people. We were friends. We were family. And we had the same thing right before I came to WTMA. I was at WQSN radio and had the offer to TMA when I just took it because of the ratings. We were all with family. We'd stand outside the building when hours were over with and we'd talk. That was at QSN too. Old Charlie Bird Lindsay and I, we used to sit out at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, just philosophize and talk about different things. We'd work together creatively. It was, you know, the salesperson would come in and they'd be involved in the creative part of it. And I enjoyed that. And, you know, a lot of times the disc jockeys, they produce creative, funny commercials and you'd have to go play it for the client, and the client a lot of times didn't like it, so you have to come back. And so the saying became, you should have heard what the client didn't buy, you know, which was the best stuff. So I think that the most impressive thing was the family type thing that we had among the people that worked together.
What do you think WTMA has meant to Charleston over the years?
WTMA has been a bulwark. It's been a standard. It is an icon. Even though the owners have changed over the years, you may not know Ted Turner used to own WTMA, but Turner Communications. And Chuck Smith, who I work with through the different owners and all, TMA has always maintained itself at the top. It would float to the top as being the leader, as being one of the ones that has been around since dirt, always will be. And they were the pioneers, something to always look up to. These guys, when they said something, it was true.